Will.i.am, founder of the Black Eyed Peas like you've never seen him before. Right from the off, we go deep down in the rabbit hole of artificial intelligence. We talk about the misconceptions of ADHD, the scam of the school system, and content I can guarantee you have never heard Will.i.am share before.
Will, Elon Musk said that he was more scared about AI than nuclear weapons, and you predicted the rise of AI. So are you excited or scared about AI?
I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it because if you're from the Congo or you're from the South Bronx, if you're from Compton, if you're from any place where humans are responsible for the underserved, underdeveloped, no opportunity, then finally you have a tool to change and transform your community for the better yourself by identifying the configuration of your environment, seeing the problems. You've lived through the problems. Now you have a tool to help you resolve that problem. So because of that, I'm excited that there's people of the world that have been ignored by humans to finally have the tools to transform and change their environment themselves.
So where a lot of people who are human are scared of AI, you think maybe AI is superior to humans,
no,
would you say?
No. I'm saying it's all math. So AI is just math. It's like a calculator to help mathematicians do math faster, right? So is a calculator superior to mathematicians? No, right? And so mathematicians are still supreme. Although it can calculate, right? The calculator cannot, you know, it doesn't understand. And although AI can calculate and give you the illusion it understands, it doesn't have empathy, doesn't have love. And so when you have empathy, love, understanding, and desire to create, no, AI is not superior to people. My comparisons to underdevelop, underserve, is identifying that somebody is responsible for not developing and not serving. Now people have the tools to serve and develop themselves, which is advanced math, right? And yeah, AI could go wrong, like nuclear went wrong. And if it goes wrong, it's gonna go wrong because of what? Because of people. Now, to people that are suffering in the Congo is because of what, AI? No, people. So I take what Elon said, right? He's smart. He didn't say anything false, but it's people he's afraid of. Nuclear AI. At the end of the day, it's people. Their intentions, their morals, their practices, their incentives, and the havoc we've caused to other people. And so the optimist, a person that came out of a struggle via technology, the folks that are afraid of technology are the folks that have sat on the lap of comfort, the lap of lux, right? And what about the folks that can be catapulted to a different living environment because of it, themselves?
I'm very proud to say this episode is sponsored by AG1. As you know, we're more than 1,000 episodes into Disruptors, and I very rarely have sponsors. I'm really choosy on sponsors, and I only pick people that I love myself and I use myself. I have turned down loads of sponsors, but personally, I've been using AG1 for nearly 14 years myself before we ever did a sponsorship deal with them. For me, AG1 really helps with my mental focus, clarity, and overall well-being. As someone who's really freaking busy and can't always sit down and eat a million vegetables in a day, knocking back a big pintful of AG1 in the morning is perfect for me. Of course, health is wealth, and I'm in my mid-40s, I'm realizing that more and more. So if you'd like to try AG1 yourself with a special exclusive offer that I have for you right now, go to drinkag1.com/disruptors. That's drinkag1.com/disruptors and get a free year supply of vitamin D3, K2 and 5 travel packs with your first purchase on me. So one more time, that's drinkag1.com/disruptors. AG1, thanks for sponsoring the show. You are legends.
In the music industry, AI seems to be really disrupting.
Yeah.
This show is called Disruptors. It's one of my favorite subjects. And I mean, I had a conversation with my progressive rock idol, Stephen Wilson. And he said that you could request to AI to have a Will I Am hit in the style of death metal in 1 minute long, and it could just come up with that music.
In 30 seconds.
Yeah. Is that good or bad for the music industry and musicians and creativity?
That's awesome. I was talking to one, I'll say the sentence this way. I was talking to one of my yoga instructors, and he was saying, or she was saying, or they were saying, you could tell the AI yoga to do a downward doggy, and it does it. That don't mean it's gonna do it for you, bro. It ain't gonna stretch for you. You still have to stretch. So for any creator that's like, oh, AI is gonna create, okay, that's cool, but I need to create. This is my stretching. Me writing is my therapy. And the only person that's going to rinse me out is me. So I don't give a fuck if AI can make a song in 30 seconds. So what?
Why are people so scared of it doing things like that? Like in the film industry, they're scared of it being able to essentially replace their career. Everyone seems so scared.
Because I think people forgot that these industries were the advanced technology at some point in time. Like we have to remember that in 1823, what we call the music industry right now didn't exist. 1723, the concept of songs that we know now, that was not the concept of song. 1623, 1523, 1423, the printing press had not been invented yet. So sheet music and orchestras playing through sheet music like they easily do now did not exist in 1423. Yes, there was sheet music, but it being ready at a snap, somebody had to chart it out by hand. There probably wasn't that many orchestras. And if they were, they were in the church. That was the music experience in 1423, 1323. What songs were people singing that summer? That hot summer of 1323. Like, yo, that shit was the shit. Sing that shit again. Yo, you heard that shit? Like, that's not what the fuck was happening. So you got to think of music in its entirety, technology in its entirety, to think about where we are right now. And where we are right now is a disruption to the music industry, not to music. This concept of recording music, do you actually have to record anymore? In this entertainment industry, there's three industries: recording music, touring music, publishing music. All separate legal departments, all separate industries that give separate advances for artists to make money. And the streaming industry has already disrupted the recording industry. I remember recording songs, selling recordings, and it's far more rewarding than streaming recordings. So speaking of disruption, but we've managed to accept streaming versus recordings. So what, we're just going to freaking like contradict ourselves as far as the next evolution of a music experience? I think a fourth industry is going to rise. There's gonna be predictive industry, essence. And in that predictive industry, artists, essence, and likeness, you need to own that. Like, we have credit cards. In 1723, there probably wasn't credit cards. 1823, the concept of credit is not what it was right now. 1923, did I say 1923 already? Yeah. 1923, the concept of credit card was not what we know of it today. And in 2023, we know what credit is. We know what, like, you know, mobile payments, mobile banks, branchless banks, cloud, crypto, it's all new stuff. So when it comes to banking your data, where's my data bank? We know data's gold, like, and we know the companies that are leveraging your data monarchies. And they do such a good job of it that you don't even know the power of your own data. There's not even a place that's like, you need to bank your data with us. The data bank you could trust. There's not even a fucking commercial for that yet.
Yeah.
Why is that important? Because eventually you're going to have your own personal AI, and your data bank is going to be responsible for prompting the AI for you, not AI you access. Like, imagine you bought a nice house and you went to the person that sold the house. You'd be like, excuse me, sir. I noticed there's no bathroom here. Where's the toilet? Oh, yeah. No. There's a toilet you can share. The whole neighborhood shares this toilet. Man, get the fuck out of here. Why in the fuck am I gonna buy a house where we all in the neighborhood share a toilet? And the reason why they did that is to bank everybody's shit in the neighborhood, to make sense of that shit and sell it to companies. Like, imagine that was the case. But that's not the case. But it probably is, because we all share the same plumbing. Different toilets, same plumbing. So we don't know if they're banking our shit. No pun intended on shit. But we do know they're banking your data. We know they're leveraging your shit. We know the cookie monster has their hands in the cookie jar. They make its nice little word called cookies for it to throw you off on the importance of that data. So, yeah, I think it's important for people to understand the power of their data. We are just right here in a new renaissance. Music and AI is cute. It's awesome. It's not going to be therapeutic for the people that rely on music to express themselves that's therapy. I have a broken heart. I got to write it out. I'm concerned about the world. Oh, I got to write it out. I just experienced the world in a beautiful place, in a beautiful way. I got to write this out. Yes, cool. AI is great. Do that.
Mm. Right. There's about three ways my mind is going. I want to go to this data banking, if it's okay, because I met a billionaire about 4 years ago who became a friend, who said to me that the future of social media is where, instead of Facebook and TikTok owning your data, you own your data. Mm. And then you can port that across any social media channel.
Mm.
And I thought, what a great idea. You know, for example, when I start my new TikTok, I could port over my 500,000 or my 1 million Facebook followers. But then I thought, why would Facebook want me to do that? Why would the big data companies want me to be my own data bank when they want to be the data bank? Just like the main banks wouldn't want me to be my own bank when they're the main banks.
Prostitutes say the same thing about pimps, but keep going.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, why? Somebody's making money off of you.
I need to wrap my head around that one a little bit. Yeah. So wouldn't the big data bankers... Wouldn't the pimps stop the prostitutes becoming decentralized and independent?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things that, when it comes to physical abuse, that pimps have on their prostitutes.
Right.
Not even theirs. The prostitutes that work for the pimps. Think about the psychological manipulation that happens between pimp and prostitute, where there's a price put on you and somebody else is profiting more than you and you're out there doing all the work. Think about the abuse, the mental abuse that's happening there. Now, here we are in a digital realm, and the only way you could enter these services that they provide for free is to sell all of yourself, where they could predict you. They understand you more than you understand you. And that understanding is for sale. They could put ads for it. You're now scrolling, getting bombarded by like hate, because the algorithm is based on hate and conflict. Like, what gets seen the most on these platforms anyhow? Somebody doing good stuff or somebody doing bad stuff? The algorithm is tuned for bad stuff. You could go and like do philanthropic stuff, or you could go out into the supermarket and do the hideous stuff. What's going to get seen the most? Your philanthropic post or your hideous post? And then what do you scroll through? What's popping up at you? I thought we went there to follow folks that we want to follow. Now we're following stuff that I didn't want to follow. Suggested stuff. And you got more suggested stuff thrown at you than the things from the people that you selected to follow. That's digital pimping. By leveraging your data and then selling that data to then throw stuff that you don't want at you. Then your whole freaking brain is now remapped because you've been desensitized by seeing hideous shit. You went to search for something fun or something gnarly or something disturbing, and out comes an ad. Like, hey, did you see what happened there? They dropped the bomb and you went to search, and then they're selling you products around that? That's crazy, right?
Mm.
That's digital pimping.
And you being your own data bank is the rebellion against that?
No.
Rebellion,
that's a very heavy word. The rebellion is gonna come from, if there was a rebellion, Gen Z's version of Gen X's products. Gen Zers, what's after Gen Z?
I'm old.
they haven't, they're at it, but competing with Facebook, they haven't done that yet. And when they do that, it'll be a little bit more humane and moral, because their moral compass is, we're seeing what Gen Z stands for, right? And yeah, let's hope that Gen Zers, I know you guys out there, one of you guys is fucking getting ready to freaking go head to head with the Giants. And that rebellion, when there's an option, when there's options that are just as the gravity, I know for me, I'm a Gen Xer with the heart of a Gen Zer. And our business practice for FYI is your data is your data. Here's an elliptical curve cryptography key for it, right? Come to FYI, collaborate, create, manifest your ideas. It stands for focus your ideas with AI. And what's yours is yours, right? So there's some start of like options for folks. You want a messenger, a better messenger, where you don't have to like have a file management, a Dropbox on a WhatsApp, and then a WeTransfer for large files, and an email to open up those WeTransfer files. Like, why are we all over the place? Why can't we just be in one place where you could send large files secured in the same place where your conversations are, and you build projects to manifest your ideas? Like, why can't a messenger be, you know, broader? Why is a message just text and images? Why can't a message be the whole entire project? And so, you know, that's our contribution to providing options by solving a problem that people don't really realize is a problem when you're having your conversations in the comments, the conversations on the message, conversations on the email. Meanwhile, your IP and the copyright is, you know, at jeopardy because every company's tools that you use for free have terms and conditions that you never read.
Mm. We'll come back to the AI side in a moment. I'm just wondering, because you've talked a lot about humanity, and I get the sense that you really care about humanity. How do you think we're doing as a race right now, as humanity?
I'm optimistic. I think we could be doing better, but we're doing good. Well, people are awesome. You see it at the concerts. People are awesome. You see it invisibly when you watch people go about going from point A to point B. The difference between people walking on the street and driving on the street, people are awesome. People don't run into people in cars. They're patient. If a car stops and you're walking across the street, we say, oh, thank you. Like, people are great. If you look at the core of people, we're all right. And then there's greed. And the question mark on the intentions of people is when greed, there's a few greedy folks that are responsible for a lot of suffering.
Is it possible to become successful, wealthy, and influential and not greedy?
Yeah, there's a dude named Mark Benioff, founder of Salesforce.
Yes.
Heart of gold. There's a couple of people out there that are like, yo, everybody was like that cat, yo, we're gonna be all right.
Why can't everybody be like him?
I don't know, but there's a Gen Zers, a lot of Gen Zers will be like him. Gen Zers are awesome. And there's a couple of Gen Zers that are gonna be kind of like rotten, right? Not every one of them are gonna be awesome, but I think the majority of Gen Zers, because they're born with in a connected world already, right? They are digitally native, and that brings this connected oneness already. And it's automatic to them.
Do you think social media's been good for humanity?
On a larger part, yeah. It has provided wealth for folks that the traditional entertainment paths would have, the gatekeepers probably wouldn't have let them in. So social media kind of like broke through these barricades at the entertainment industry. But the entertainment industry didn't do that on purpose. It's just limited because film costs a lot of money. Microphones and traditional microphones and tape to record albums and lacquer to record, that costs a lot of money. A studio was like a city block long. The council to mix the songs on were like pretty big, required lots of energy, electricity, engineers. And so who got a record deal? You had to be super selective because it was expensive to record songs and films. Tape what went on the tape was like, yo, we got to make sure, we got to rehearse. Why we got to rehearse? Well, shit, with this tape, this tape's fucking expensive. This film's expensive. So let's rehearse. So people's skill sets were like always vibrating at high frequency because to record it down to film and tape was expensive. So now here we have this thing, not expensive, to record. It's expensive to make this, but the people that made this, people paid with their lives for you to have it for cheap. It's expensive as fuck, actually. But to put information on it, the memory is not like tape. It's not like film. So the skill level to enter here probably is not the skill level of a Roberta Flack or a, you know, the recording industry skill level or the acting industry, the movie industry skill level. But the abundance, the amount of people that can make a living from here. So first, the quality, the appreciation of talent and quality comes down, but the abundance of how many people benefit and can make a living from it is awesome. Democratization, and that's great. Diversity, that's great. Inclusion, that's amazing. So yeah, social media has been awesome, but also has been bad. The amount, that's because the algorithm. The algorithm promotes the most hideous shit sometimes. Makes people feel bad. Suicide has went up. Depression has gone up. The hate, because the algorithm fans hate, amplifies hate. And if they could tweak the algorithm, probably the companies that are have incentives to keep it as it is are going to be rendered obsolete when Gen Z says, nah, I think there's a better way to do it. So we're relying on Gen Z. Whether the Gen Z is doing that or folks that have the heart of a Gen Z, of the Gen Z, to bring Zen, my G. See, I did to flip the words. Yeah. From Gen Z to Gen, my Z, to Zen, my G. Yeah, yeah. Wordplay.
Yeah. We were just having this conversation in the car because I did possibly the most meaningful interview in 1,000 that I've done last week from a lady who basically was a sex slave and human trafficked and her own parents sold her to be killed. And the algorithm gave it nothing, no reach on TikTok, on YouTube. And it really made me sad, actually, because some of our more gimmicky, clickbaity content, millions of views. And I used to be an artist, and I'm quite a creative initially, like from who I am. And I really wrestle with that. Like, that causes me pain because I'd love to just do great work with meaningful people having amazing conversations. Like, I don't really edit the conversations. I don't take quirky bits out. So zip, 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 like Mr. Beast stuff is zip, 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 zip. And I just wonder if I'm old and I'm stuck. No, I'm not stuck. It's just a personal tension that I have where I also know that I want my work to be seen. Do you have that conflict? And is there anything you'd say about playing to the algorithm versus just relentlessly doing your good work and in 10 years someone will notice you?
Yeah, so I'm gonna, a powerful question, powerful insight. There's a song that we did called Street Living. And to me, if you were to say, hey, out of all the songs you've written, what's one do you like the most? I love Where's the Love. This is before the algorithm though. This is like the people's, you know, human selection. So that song was big because people selected it. And now the algorithm filtering it is what we are living in now. Street Living, I think, is like music. The chord progressions are like real sentimental, heavy, somber. And then the lyrics that we're saying over it, street living, caught in a trap, guns or books, sell crack or rap, right? Before we wrote both of those songs, I wrote a song called They Don't Want Music. We did that with James Brown. Why is that important? Because it's all been just like an experiment for me to understand what's going on. And listen to the chorus. Sorry.
They said break bread with your enemies.
You don't want it in this town.
I say go further.
Okay, here we go. Listen to the chorus. Mm. The chorus is pretty freaking, God darn it. Here it goes. Check out this chorus. Here comes the chorus. Check it out. Right? They don't want music. They just want boom. And so Street Living to Boom Boom Pow is proof of that. So in 2005, we wrote that with James Brown. And I'm like, yo, popular culture is great, but I don't think they want music. It's 2005. By 2009, we released Boom Boom Pow. That shit was one of our biggest songs. Mm. We say, one time I was going to a train in Japan, somebody came up to us and they were like, wait a John, Black Eyed Peas, I love the Boom Boom Pow. You say boom 300 times, 300 sometimes. I'm like, wait, you've been sitting there counting how many times I said boom, 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 gotta get that boom, boom, boom. They counted the booms, bro. Counted the booms to the point where they're like, when I see Will I Am, I'm going to tell him how many times I realize he said the word boom. And then after that, right, Boom Boom Pow came out. If you ask me, yo, what's that song about? What's Boom Boom Pow about? Like lyrically, be like, ah, song's about the beat. It's about like literally the kick. Boom, boom, boom is the kick. I'm talking about. If I were to walk into the room and be like, okay, there's a window here, there's plants, there's this table, there's these cameras, and I'm just like giving you a download of what I'm seeing. So what is Boom Boom Pow about? Oh, it's the download of the Sonics. So it's really, really about nothing, which is cool because sometimes escape, sometimes like, you know, not everything has to be like deep. Mm. And I like to get deep, but the people don't want that. That's why people stay at the beach and a few people go scuba diving. Like, how many people are like, yo, let's go scuba diving? How many people is buying scuba gear right now versus bikinis? You know what I'm saying? What sells more, bikinis or scuba gear? Same with music, same with the algorithm. It's the unfortunate state of current reality. So after Boom Boom Pow blew up, we released Street Livin'. And lo and behold, 7 million views to 400 and something million views to a testament in 2005, they don't want music. They just want boom. So we gave them boom. We gave them boom 324 times. Thank you, Yuki-san. Like, thank you so much for pointing that out.
That is still causing me some pain.
Yeah.
Because, well, let me throw it. This isn't about me, it's about you, so.
No, but as a creator, I do both.
That was, yeah.
As a creator, you still have to like make dessert and the delicious nutrition meal. But if people keep coming to the chef and getting dessert, like, yo, what about these vegetables though? Oh yeah, no, I'll take the carrot cake. No, yes, 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 yes. I mean, there's carrots in that, right? I mean, yes, there's carrots in this carrot cake, but you don't want the carrot, this carrot meal I made? No, let me get that carrot cake. Oh.
So you're okay giving them what they want as long as you can also do what you want. Is that what you mean?
I'm okay. I'm a chef. I make things that I need to release. Mm. What people select, what they consume, what they select to be in their life, I have no control over that. I just have to do all types of stuff. Now, if someone says, man, all you're doing is making Boom Boom Pows, and my humps. I'm like, well, that's not true. I write my Street Livin's. I do Where's the Loves. Thank God Where's the Love was our first, you know, entry to success. Mm. Thank God that existed before the algorithm. Mm. Because maybe it wouldn't have been what it was if it had come out today.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had this particular conversation with a lot of really interesting, smart, creative people. I had it with one of the brothers of Bross, and he was like, just be kind and do great work and it's good enough. But is it?
So, no, that's not enough. You have to go out there and be philanthropic as well. So that's why I went back to my neighborhood and started a school, after school program in 2008, before Boom Boom Pow. And I got a feeling. And I've continued that program, giving these kids from my community robotics and computer science skill sets. Now, almost over 12 years later, we serve over 14,000 students. We've sent kids to Stanford, to Brown, to Dartmouth. We have amazing scholars from our program. And singing about it, writing about it, that's not enough. Mm. You have to do about it. And technology, I'm a tech enthusiast. Music, I'm a musician because of tech. I play the computer, not the piano. I play the computer, not the drums. I play the computer, not the sax or the trumpet. That's my instrument. And it's the reason why I love tech so much. I salute the engineers. Had we won a Grammy on camera, I would have thanked the engineers for making the gramophone. That's a piece of technology, that gramophone. Yeah, you have to do about it. Mm. And so, like, writing about it is great. It's, for those that do, that's awesome. Mm. For those that sing about it, that's great. Because that's a start. But then all the invisible folks that are out there philanthropic, providing these programs for folks, that's amazing. And we need to put some visibility on the invisible angels out there. Because, like I said, the algorithm renders a lot of these invisible angels invisible.
I'm going to need to look at my notes for this, because I wanted to research all the different things I thought I could find that you do, because I already knew you do a lot more than a lot of people know. So this is what I found. Can you pick that up in a minute? Rapper, singer, songwriter, producer, actor, designer, coder, investor, tech entrepreneur. I've probably missed some.
To clear up some, so coding, I'm not a coder.
You learned some, did you?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I'm a coder. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you learn something and you're not. Yeah. I learned how to play baseball. Am I a baseball player? Nah. I mean, I can hit it sometimes, but I don't consider myself a baseball player. I learned to do some coding, and I wish I was as fluent in coding as I'm fluent as songwriting. But I'm not there. Designer, I design some clothes, but I'm not a designer. That's not my thing. I design stuff for me, but that's not, I can't claim, like, I respect designers and coders too much that just because I dabbled in it or dabble doesn't mean I'm that. So I'm not a designer, even though I design, and I'm not a coder, even though I try to learn it. The other ones, producing, I love producing from the editing side. I love to edit. You send me a song and be like, yeah, let me edit that. Like, I love editing. I love to write to other people's beats. I could make beats and write to my own beats, and that process is great. But my writing to other people's stuff, it just comes out fast. I love that process. Actor, I was in Wolverine. I watched that back. I'm like, you know what I mean? That's cool. I can't say I'm an actor. I respect Leonardo DiCaprio. Grew up with that cat ever since we were 15. That guy's an actor. 16, going to clubs together. He's the best. So I'm nothing. No way, bro. I'm not even in the same league. So acting, nah. Just because I was in a movie doesn't make me an actor. But I've acted. What else is that?
Investor, entrepreneur.
Yes. Investor, entrepreneur, yep. Entrepreneur is like, investor, I made some pretty cool bets. Invested in Tesla in 2007, before 2006, 7, before Elon took over the company. Twitter, early on. Pinterest, Dropbox, OpenAI, Anthropic, Hugging Face, and Runway. made some bad investments as well. Missed out on some big ones because I was seeing it from, learned the biggest lesson of my life. One of the biggest lessons of my life. I met Brian Chetsky before they had launched Airbnb. And they were like, yo, we got $200K for you to come in. And I'm like, wait, what about room service? What about concierge? And I was so like seeing it from my perspective of traveling the world, going to the best hotels, that I couldn't see going to somebody's house or renting a room or renting somebody's house without concierge, room service, and maintenance. Like I don't think that's gonna work. So I didn't invest in Airbnb. Missed out, mega, like big time missed out. And that lesson is never look at things or only look at things from your POV on what you would like. You gotta think about what other people might like and enjoy. And then how to improve concepts that other people could benefit from. And not look at it from like, well, this is what I like. Other people are gonna like it too. That's not always the case. You know?
You don't seem scared to try new things.
No, hell no.
Because a lot of people are.
A lot of people are afraid to fail. And that new thing to them is like, well, what if I don't get it right? Or what if I fail? I don't wanna go up to bat. What if I strike out? So I'd rather not go up to bat. Mm. You see it like you go to summits or conferences. Somebody's talking, you know they got questions. And then they say, we're gonna open up the floor for questions and we see any hands. And everybody's hands stay down until that one brave person's like, and then after that one brave person, then other hands pop up. But why don't people wanna raise their hand when they're afraid of asking a stupid question after hearing a bunch of smart shit? Even though they have some questions of some of the smart things they said, but nobody wants to feel like they don't know, or they feel they don't want to be perceived like they're stupid for asking a question. There are no stupid questions. Where'd you get your shoes? Start off with a okay question that people would be like, okay, we're comfortable. People, when it comes to public perception, shut down. And when it comes to investments or starting new ideas or taking a leap, because there's eyes watching, people shut down. I say, fuck the eyes. Who cares? You fail, you fail. You fall, you get up. You know, that's what only thing you're going to lose is your ability to grow on a frequency level. How do you expand your spectrum? Are you just going to stay RGB, or are you trying to go from blue to purple to violet to ultraviolet to X-ray? You really trying to go the full spectrum? You going to stop at red, or are you going to go to infrared to radio? You want to go? How big is your spectrum? Just RGB, you just see color? Or you see all this other stuff that's coming from on the electromagnetic spectrum?
Have you always been that way? Because I was petrified of rejection probably till I was 35. I'm 44 now. I had to bang it out of my head, unlearn it hard with therapy and personal development and God knows how many books. I was the fat kid in school. I got rejected from sports and girls. And from age 13, when I lost all the weight, it was just still there for, a quarter of a century until being an entrepreneur and business and having somewhat of a public profile finally shook it out of me. But I don't get that baggage with you. But there's people like me who have got that baggage.
I think because I was raised in an all-Mexican neighborhood, and there were only a few black families in my neighborhood, that a lot of that stuff got out of me because we were different. And then being poor, going to a rich school, and seeing rich folks go to school with lunch bags and lunch pails, and you had like a government ticket for free food, and you had secondhand clothes, but the rich folks said, wow, yeah, I like your outfit. Oh, you like this? Yeah, you dress cool. Oh, encouragement goes a long way, especially when you're different, or if you're underserved or underdeveloped or poor. And I remember going to school, I didn't have a belt one day, so I put my uncle's tie on as a belt, tie the double Windsor knot, and that was my belt. And the rich kids were like, dang, William, that's funky. Oh, you like this? Oh, well, shit then. Well, damn. So you're... My disability financially became my ability because creativity was my currency. Creativity is my currency. I'm rich creatively. I may not have money now, but as soon as I get these ideas out, shit, these motherfuckers are gonna grow. So, you know, what's the worst that's gonna happen? Somebody's gonna talk shit to you. Now, what if you're a farmer? Take a perspective of a farmer. Farmers need shit. It's called manure. So if somebody's talking shit, give it to me. I need that shit. Talk all the shit you want. I'm gonna grow some shit with that shit. Cause I'm a farmer, bro. There's nothing you can tell me that's gonna fuck up my frequency. So why don't you save your energy? But if you wanna give out energy, well, send me that energy, bro. I am a fucking, what is that called? The motherfucking shit that brings the sun in, sunlight in, you know that shit?
Greenhouse?
Let's go, no. Solar panel.
Bosh. What gen are you?
I'm a solar panel. If you're gonna waste your energy talking shit about me, well shit, that's too bad for you. You giving me the energy I need to fucking go. What? So what? Oh what? I'm gonna take off. I fall. You gonna laugh at me? Well shit, I need that energy to get back up. Oh, that's funny to you? That shit was funny, huh? I fucked up, right? God damn it. I ain't gonna fuck up next time because I learned. And if I fall again, guess what? That shit was funny, right? Oh shit, I scraped my, well that hurts though. My knee that's bleeding here, that actually hurts. My emotions, that shit was funny. I'm not, that's not my kryptonite. You know why that's not my kryptonite? Because I survived Crips tonight. That's gangbang, right? Your words are not going to release blood. You know why? Because I grew up around Bloods. I grew up around Cholos and Crips. And that's more terrifying than any words that you have to say to me. Any opinion, perspectives. Nah, you gotta have that mentality. And you gotta be able to take constructive criticism. If somebody's laughing at you because they say your breath smells, you gotta be like, oh, damn it, my breath does smell, huh? Oh shit, I gotta do something about that. People are not talking shit only to talk shit. They're not hating just to hate. This mentality is like, yo, they hating on me. No, they just hate that your breath smells. You should do something about it. There's some truth to some of the things that people say. You have to be self-aware. Maybe your breath does smell. Check it if somebody says it does. Mm. Maybe, just maybe. And if it doesn't, and if you're the only one checking, you gotta be able to then tell your friends like, yo, must you smell? I mean, were they? And if your friend says no, but then another friend says yes, you need to check that one friend. Or you go to the dentist and be like, yo, do I got like, is there something going on here? Because a couple people have been telling me about my breath stinks. Then a dentist who gets paid to make sure you're all right is going to tell you the truth. As soon as you go to a dentist after everybody's been saying your breath smells, their whole premise is to get your shit correct. So you cannot fold or get shooken up from public opinion. Because if there's truth in that public opinion, then you got to use that truth to grow. Even if it's personal, like your breath smells, it's okay to be told the truth. What are you going to do about it? I woke up this morning, my breath stunk, and then I brushed my teeth.
Do you know what I was? Random one. You know, you see the set.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. Okay, thanks, Harry. That was my favorite piece so far. Thank you, Will.
Oh, the breath?
Yeah, no, the whole piece. Okay. I'm British. I have a much bigger British following than I do American. And we seem to be more risk averse. We seem to, for example, one of my biggest fears is going bust, and I can handle losing all my money. I would not like to lose other people's money. I just think I just would do anything not to lose other people's money. And I think that's limited me a little bit. Maybe I'd have a $1 billion company if I wasn't so worried. And in England, it's like losing money or someone else's money or an investor's money is really bad. My American friends tell me it's part of your CV and you need to have done it a couple of times before you're unicorn. Is there anything you can say to us British people specifically around the you might lose investor's money part?
I like to use my own money. Even when I didn't have money, I like to work really hard. I love it. And people that see your hard work, they want to see you win. And Jimmy Iovine was one of the first people that believed in my go, go, go mentality, that he invested a lot of money in my ideas. And I thank that man for seeing the quality, my tenacity. And I remember one day somebody said, yo, you owe the record company like $5 million. We got signed in 1997. Our first record came out in 1998, and we went on tour. 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. And finally we saw success at the end of 2003 with Words of Love. But before we even got there, Jimmy's like, we talked about like this new record called Elefunk at the time. And I remember somebody telling me that Black Eyed Peas owes Interscope Records $5 million. And he still believed in what we can do. Because usually they drop an artist if they don't think they're going to ever recoup the money owed. That's a daunting thing when you're creating and you know debt is stacking. What are you going to do about it? Are you just going to... it's a selfish thing. You have to be selfless. You have to realize that you are creating a service. Your ideas are to service society. If you're doing things for you, it's called a hobby. And you could still have a fulfilling life creatively while work for somebody else. But if you want to work for yourself and your creativity or whatever it is you want to do is now a service to other people, you have to think about other people. And the moment I learned that is when, you know, I never thought Where's the Love would be a hit, because I'm like, no, this is too, we're talking about some serious hardcore stuff. Let's get started. Yeah. This is a hit, you know. Shut Up, yep, that's a hit. But now Where's the Love? Not this song. And when it became a hit, wow, that told me something about humanity that I never thought. And it's beautiful. It has everything to do with other people's money. Because to get us to develop, to become a successful group under Universal, that's other people's money. Eventually, you still have to pay it back, so you're still paying it with your future earnings. So you're taking a bet on yourself. Are you taking a bet on yourself to win or lose? If you're taking a bet on yourself to lose, then you get money up front. If you're taking on a bet on yourself to win, then you take a bet on the back end. If you take a bet on the back end, then other people's money, you got to treat it like it's yours, because it is yours on the back end. If you don't think you're going to be successful on the back end, then you get money up front and then your shit's watered down because you sold out. Sold out's a harsh word. You're only looking at it short-sighted. And the same thing is for investors. If you, investments or entrepreneurship, do you believe in your idea? And how long do you want that idea to manifest? Are you gonna sacrifice everything and weigh it out until it's successful? Until it's successful, it could be 4 years, 5 years, 10 years. Are you in it for the long run? Are you in it for trial and trial and try and try and try again? Or are you in it from the perspective of tech and entrepreneurship, what fail fast? Because fail fast, that's cool. That's one path. There's another path like, no, this idea, I'm sticking through it. I don't care how many times I have to pivot. I'm in it. Because my time is my money. My creativity is my currency. And my reputation is my foundation. And eventually people will see my commitment, my belief, and it will render itself successful. And if you come at it from that perspective, then investors will believe, the people will you will resonate in society as like, okay, this person really truly believes in what their solution or service is, and somebody will like it. Somebody will gravitate towards it. There's lots of shitty shit on the shelves. How did it get there? There's lots of shitty songs on streaming platforms. How did it get there? There's lots of shitty TV shows. There's a shit tons of shitty movies. How did they get out? And if shit is out there in the world and farmers need shit, then what about your gems? What about your rubies? What about your diamonds? What about your freaking solutions? What about your remedies? You got to be the usher of your own ideas and be patient to materialize those things and treat everybody's money like your money, because eventually it will be your money. Sorry if that's long-winded.
That's great.
But you have to have that like dedication, belief, that nurturing mother to your ideas. to the things and the products and the services you want to bring to society. It's like that mother, the mother, not the father.
I had hundreds of questions requested to ask you, because often I'll give them a little tip off of where I'm going and what I'm doing and who I'm interviewing. And what this came out way on top about coping with and dealing with ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how you label yourself, but plenty of people were telling me you label yourself with ADHD. I have a different view on labels, but what's your view on dealing with it, harnessing it for creativity? Is it something that you identify that you do have? Is it a kryptonite or a superpower?
In school, I've always been hyperactive. I've always been, you know, the kid in school that was always moving about, hard to focus on what the teacher was trying to tell me.
Is that just because you weren't interested though in that? Sorry to interrupt.
Yes and no. I would have been interested if they made it interesting. You can make any subject that's not interesting interesting. Mm.
And so then maybe the kid doesn't have ADHD.
I think ADHD is not the problem for the person that they claim has ADHD. It's the problem for the person that doesn't know how to, you know, reach a hyperactive person. And hyperactivity is a superpower. And if you take a look at all the folks that impact, a lot of them are hyperactive. They have hyper thoughts. Mm. Whether their thoughts are hyper or their energy is hyper, that hyperactivity and attention disorder, okay, let's break that down, focus. And let's take a look at society as a whole now because of this conditioner, where everybody's mind has been reconfigured to notification and pop-ups. And let's see how many people now can have full-on focused conversations. I guarantee you, most of the people in popular culture probably has some form of attention disorder. And it's been proven that ADHD was fueled by pharma to give kids drugs to make it easier for teachers to have like this one size fits all teaching style. Not every kid's the same. So to expect little Bobby to learn like Melissa, well, that's not fair to Bobby if Bobby is hyperactive. That doesn't mean Bobby is not brilliant. As a matter of fact, I bet you Bobby is brilliant and you're suppressing them to learn at the speed of everyone else. What if we taught Bobby at his speed and focused on what Bobby's really good at? Maybe Bobby's not a historian. Maybe Bobby's not a mathematician. Maybe Bobby is a problem solver. Maybe Bobby's a strategic. Maybe he's a freaking a wizard at other things. Has anybody tried to figure out what Bobby's superpower is? Or are you labeling Bobby to be like everybody else in the class that fits into this teaching regimen that doesn't really, you know, point to everybody getting jobs after they go through this course of school? Like, does education really produce careers? Right now in society, you have to have a diploma to work for a company.
Not mine.
But to have a company, you just have to have an idea. Like, if you want to have like the best job in the world, companies would be like, what college did you go to? What's your degrees? But to create a company that people work for, you just have to have an idea. Now, how do we get those people to start creating ideas, right? Mark Zuckerberg. Did he graduate college? Austin Russell, the guy from Luminar, created LiDAR technology for autonomous vehicles. Did he graduate college? Hold on. Hello.
Wait for the ad.
I just want to know Bill Gates. Did Bill Gates graduate college, and what entrepreneurs that have these mega companies actually graduated from college? And this is dangerous because I try to go to the hood and tell kids to go to college. So you still need to go to college. Don't get me wrong. But teaching everybody to be at the same speed as everybody, you're going to miss a lot of diamonds. Mm. If you want everybody to be rocks, if you're not taking the time to polish certain rocks to realize that they're diamonds, you're going to miss out on a lot of fucking diamonds. And I think that's what we have right now, where they're medicating diamonds to be rocks. instead of polishing certain rocks to be diamonds. Mm.
I wish I had more time to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a, yeah, that's a medicating diamonds to be rocks instead of polishing rocks to be diamonds. Mm. Yeah, I like that one. Mm.
So we have your hard stop in T minus very short amount of time. Can I do a super fast quick fire round?
Yeah, boom.
Is that all right? Have you ever rejected a song that became a big hit?
Yeah. I wrote a song called Ordinary People for Black Eyed Peas, and it didn't fit right for us, but it became a big hit for John Legend. Somebody gave me a song, and I didn't like it because it was bragging about money. And it was Chris Brown's I'm Getting Paper, and I recorded it, but I was like, I don't like bragging about money. But it became a big hit for him. Yeah, those are the two. Mm. One I wrote, another one someone wrote. John Baptiste, thank you so much for the I'm Getting Paper. But it was better for Chris Brown. Mm. Gotta hit it, but it would hit. And then that never would, Busta Rhymes probably never would have had that awesome verse. It had Black Eyed Peas taking that song. So thank God for us not wanting to rap about money. So we are blessed with that amazing Busta Rhymes verse on that Chris Brown song. It's freaking brilliant.
Most disruptive musician in the world right now.
Most disruptive musician in the world right now? Demis from DeepMind, who created that freaking AI. Yeah, that was pretty disruptive. Because now you have to rethink what a musician is. Mm. Is it the AI, or is it the person that developed, or the team that developed the AI music machine that can make awesome sounds and play? We'll give you the illusion it's playing the guitar because it sounds like it, but I think Demis and the DeepMind guys and the Google cats, that's a pretty bold statement. But right now, yeah, that's... Mm. Oh, but human musician? So the most disruptive human musician in the world right now, Thundercat, amazing bassist, Thundercat. Bruno Mars, he's an amazing musician. Plays multiple instruments. He's awesome. And yeah.
Best and worst advice you ever remember receiving?
Worst advice I remember receiving was, don't put Fergie in the group. What are you, crazy? That's stupid. That was the worst advice somebody gave me, because they obviously have been proven wrong. She was awesome. Addition to our squad at the right time. And so we ignored advice. The best advice, put Fergie in the group. Jimmy Iovine, best advice.
Biggest regret?
Biggest regret? Not learning how to code when I was 16, because I would have been fucking awesome. Shit, if I knew how to code when I was fucking 16, you know how fucking awesome I would be at fucking coding? Fuck out of here. I love editing and making shit and staring at the computer. If my brain was configured to code Python, C++, you know, the new stuff like Flutter or React Native or Qt, whatever, give a fuck what it is, I would be the shit. But it's cool though. I get to work with fucking coders that code, you know, banter, and I still like to collaborate. But sometimes I want to be like, you have to wait, let me, oh, that's right, I don't know how to do it. Damn it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I hate that. I can't just be like, you have to wait, I could freaking. Wrong universe. I'm really awesome in one of these universes. Not this one. Damn it. You see? Yeah.
I usually end the show by asking people what disruptive means to them, but I'm going to reword it for this one. FYIAI. Mm. How is that disruptive?
Focus your ideas with AI. That's disruptive because the current state of phone is not about focus. It's about bombardment on attention. Your attention is spread all over the place. Everyone's sucking energy from you, and there's no real incentive to or tool that is complete focus in the architecture of the product itself. You have an idea, you need a messenger to help you corral your team to stay focused on that idea. And to stay focused on that idea, here's, you know, digital asset management file storage in the same place where your messages are. And to keep your data and digital assets safe. Here's an encryption key, because crypto told us the importance of encryption keys. But why isn't the same type of architecture for my ideas and my conversations? Why just NFTs? Why can't I have encryption for my thoughts, conversation, and team flow? And that's disruption when it comes to messengers. Because if you go to any other type of messenger, you don't have that. You have to have all these different satellites to have the messenger work in the way that FYI works. And disruption is awesome. But I think moving forward, disruption was for Web 2.0. Like, you had taxis. Uber came and said, hey, we're going to disrupt your relationship with taxis. It's like they interrupted a conversation with you in a taxi. Interruption, disruption. Move out the way. Here's something else. Disruption wasn't around like that for Web 1.0, right? The Web 1.0 was a disruption itself. And then that concept splintered and brought us Airbnbs. Oh, yeah, hotels? Nah, see, I missed out on that one. Hotels? We're going to disrupt lodging. You too now have a villa, have access to a villa. Wait, you want to stay at that hotel? You want your own house. Make it feel like it's yours. That's very disruptive. And now that we're moving from social media to intelligence media, where I'm literally having a conversation with the internet, like a real flow. I'm not searching anything. If the wisest person came in here and walked in here, are you going to search him or search her or search them? Or are you going to have a conversation with them? You're going to have dialogue with them. You go to a library and you search the library. You don't search the librarian. But what if the librarian had all the information with everything that's in a library? You're going to have a conversation with the librarian. You're not going to search him, her, or them. And so we're going to go from social media, where you socialize, to the theory that you're socializing, to intelligence media, where you're going to have intellectual conversations undisrupted. Like, I try to freaking YouTube and Google. Here comes fucking commercials, which is cool. Commercials are great. But I think the disruption in the age of intelligence, you don't want to disrupt intelligent information flow. You don't want to interrupt the download of intelligence in this new renaissance that we're walking into. And to do that, it's conversational. So messengers are important. Your data is important. So a key is important. The key for what? To organize all your thoughts, all your ideas, all your, you know, the precious digital assets that you've been working really hard on. So our vision, my vision at FYI is don't kill the messenger, because the messenger is going to be something really important when messages and the message is going to materialize industries of tomorrow. Sorry, you're going to materialize ideas to create industries of tomorrow. A message is pathways for people to, you know, get out of their certain circumstance, whether it's mental, physical, or conceptual. Don't kill the messenger and focus your ideas with AI.
This has been fun, insightful, inspiring. Thank you very much, Will.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.